Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Play podcast. My name's Jason. With me is Miles. Hey, Miles.
Good day, all.
So we're here again, the last round of the Telstra Premiership, round 25. We're just reviewing that round.
You smell it? Do you smell it?
I do smell finals time.
Smell finals.
And you can sort of when we go through the games, you'll be able to tell which teams were up for it, I guess, the finals time, and which team are just happy for the season to be over. Starting with the first game, the Rabbitohs and Roosters. Rabbitohs coming away with that one, 16-10. Good crowd. I mean, you know, what could have been a better crowd? It's at ANZ. The weather was great, but
20,000.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like so much of a joke when there's sort of 20 odd thousand there at ANZ.
No, true. I think South deserved that win. When I watched it, I don't know if there was nothing the Roosters could have done to, come away with that win. What did you think?
I thought the Roosters looked good in the first half. Like they were just doing, you know, what they would normally do. You know, they didn't look like they were doing anything out of the ordinary. And it was what 10-2 at half time.
Yeah.
So it it all turned in that all turned in that second half. So just I don't think there's too much to it, but that the first try that the Rabbitohs scored to sort of get everything started for them, you see Latrell Mitchell get caught out of the line, like out of the defensive line, like he charged out of the line, and then left Tupou out by himself, and then it was just he just got beat on the outside. And then that second try the Cody Walker try, that was pretty good. That was really good, really well done. So I thought, a tale of two halves, really. The Rabbitohs sort of came home strong. The Roosters couldn't really go anywhere, couldn't get first, and couldn't drop out of second. So, whether they were having a sort of Bo Peep at next week. So it didn't matter too much. Obviously the Roosters and the Rabbitohs, the oldest rivalry in the game, that they'd be up for it. But the Rabbitohs were just a little too strong.
And playing each other again this week too. So
plenty of errors too. Like, that was sort of an uncharacteristic trait for both teams, that the errors started to really creep in. At the back end of that game, which is usually those two teams are fairly good at ball control, and it sort of got a little bit out of hand, and the Sam Burgess little affair got a little
on Billy Smith. Well, it looks like they're offering him this will probably go further, but it looks like they're offering him a 1 week ban. For the hair pull on Billy Smith. Being that they're, even if they lose, they're still in. It depends on the plans. He'd have carryover points surely if he contested. But
this will be his third suspension of the year.
Yeah.
So he's got to have carryover points. It's just good. Yeah,
I think.
I know he plays the game aggressively and everything like that, but just he's a detriment to the team at the moment. He can't keep himself on the field.
He's a leader, and he's not playing like a leader.
That's
at
right.
all because leaders no, don't exactly. do these little silly things. Leaders stand up. Leaders
his
don't.
His first game back a couple of weeks ago, and he KOs Matt Moylan.
Yeah.
And he gets suspended straight away. Now he comes back and pulls hair. Well, who pulls hair?
Pommies, I suppose.
Like it wasn't much.
Yeah,
it wasn't much, but it's stupid.
Yeah.
To think that you can get away with that when there's 10 cameras on you.
This is true. Yeah, definitely true. Yeah.
It's crazy. I don't get it.
Next game was I love this game. I actually caught all this game. It was Eels and the Parramatta Eels and the Manly Sea Eagles. Great crowd at Bankwest Stadium. It's actually a really I don't know, every time I seem to watch a footy game at Bankwest, I haven't been to Bankwest, but watch it on the TV. They get decent crowds there. It's built like a footy stadium. Has that great atmosphere. The Eels got away with that 32-16 in terms of they get away. They played remarkably well, especially probably one man named Sivo. Well, he's not named Sivo. That's his last name. Getting three tries in the second half. What did you think? He's definitely, just before you keep going, he's easily, to me, the rookie of the year.
I think so. It's either him or Ruben Garrick, I think.
Yeah.
It was just a really entertaining
game to watch, considering.
But a fast Manly, start too.
Yeah, and Manly were up for it. I mean, losing Tommy Trbojevic is a big loss, but they could have played obviously better, but they didn't play too bad, at least to sort of be competitive.
Manly were in it. Were in the game all the way up until about 10, I think it was 11 minutes to go, and they had the incorrect play the ball by Martin Taupau. They were on the attack. Taupau had the incorrect play the ball penalty.
Yeah.
Straight away, Parramatta goes down and scores straight away. But the second half, like, Parramatta gave Manly so many opportunities to come back in the game and to let them linger. And yeah, once Parramatta could hang on to the ball, then they put them away. But they gave Manly so many chances to stay in the game, to stay there. But yeah, but they incorrect play the ball penalty by Taupau. Manly was on the attack.
Yeah.
They turned that straight away into a try. And then they run in another one at the end. I think Sivo got another one at the end there.
Yeah, one just before the 78 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. And there was a couple of sin bins in that too, a couple of high tackle sin bins as well, which I thought were, I thought they were ordinary, but I don't know, whether they're going a little bit silly with the head high and sending you to the bin. It was Kane Evans for the Eels.
I think it was Taupau for
Manly. And yeah, and they were going off their rocker about it on the commentary. It's just like it wasn't that bad.
Which one, Taupau's one or Kane Evans? But in this day and age, I've seen worse things. I guess worse hits get sent off. He definitely deserved 10 minutes. I think
it was close.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
Nah, okay. I've seen worse. It's probably just the way he hits too. Like, he's, it's just the way he actually hits.
But it's
probably makes it look worse.
And it sounded bad too, because everybody in the crowd go, oh, and it was the same thing. The same thing happened in the next game with the Cowboys and the Storm. Yeah. I think it might have been Pappenhausen, had sort of broken the line, and he got collared by John Asiata. And it looked rotten, but he caught him around the chest, and everybody in the crowd did the same thing. Everybody went off their tits about it, he caught him around the shoulder. There was nothing wrong with it. In this, that's what I thought. I thought the crowd reaction had more to do with anything. I didn't think it was that bad of a high tackle. Okay, 10 minutes is probably a little extreme to be sent to the bin, but I really didn't think it was that bad. It was the same thing as the Hargraves hit in the Roosters Rabbitohs game earlier on Thursday night. He couldn't avoid that sort of that shoulder hit where I can't think who the Rabbitohs player. He had blood coming out of his head, but he just Rhea Hargraves just got into an awkward spot.
Yeah.
He didn't come in leading with the shoulder or anything of that. I don't think so. But yeah, those two send offs. Yeah, that was probably, I thought the Kane Evans one was probably a little bit extreme, but yeah, whether you think the Tapao one was warranted or not, I really didn't think it was that bad of a high hit.
Well, just segue into the next game, Melbourne winning 24-16 at home in a pretty dull affair, being that it was a bit rainy. Melbourne finishing in a high, being minor premiers, which is probably decided, I'd say, 2 months ago for Melbourne. And congratulations to the Cowboys. I thought they were competitive that whole way for that game. They played pretty well.
They were one of the only teams that I sort of saw that were up for it that weren't in finals contention.
Yep. They were really up for it. Scott Drinkwater again, playing that is his position. He's come into that side and I think has changed that side for the better at fullback. Scott Drinkwater. Which is good because they were sort of always tinkering for someone at the back when Lachlan Coote left.
I don't know how many different people they played at fullback. They played Kahu for a little bit. They had Morgan there for a little while. They had Tamari Martin before he had his little thing with the bleed on the brain and everything like that. They tried so many things to try and tinker and tamper with the lineup. And now that you're solid at those key positions and going into next year, if they're going to keep those core four with Drinkwater, Morgan, Clifford and Granville, it's looking up, but they need help with a center, a strike center. And I've heard that they're targeting Curtis Scott from the Storm. Mm-hmm. So that'll be interesting there.
Or just one player that played remarkably well, Ryan Pappenhausen, 300 meters. He made that game. He's really made that number one. Made the number one position. I think that's his position. They've dropped Brody Croft. Out of finals. So they've picked, I guess, their 23-man squad, and he's not even got a look in. Ryan Pappenhausen is. He looks like a young Billy Slater, which is a high, huge compliment. But he's making so many and easily. It's not even like he's not a big fella, which is probably like Billy a la Billy Slater.
He's not a huge bloke at all.
He's definitely their number one and their star number one. The only problem is he's on a pretty low contract with people that teams can negotiate with him after November 1. Melbourne signed him 2 years ago, and then so he's contracted to Melbourne next year, but he's only getting paid $200,000 next year. But if he keeps playing,
that's not too bad though.
No, upwards of 200 grand next year. But the way he's playing, and the Tigers, it was the Tigers are the ones that are really chasing him at the moment. The West Tigers.
Right.
But if he keeps playing the way he's playing, he could seriously start getting around that $600,000 mark. The way he's been playing. If he stays in the Storm, yeah, correct. But so I mean Storm could they could tinker with their sort of, I guess, their contracts and that, because he's a keeper. They need to keep him.
Well, how many more years is Cameron Smith going to play?
Well, this is true. Sure. Well, that's probably a big chunk of money we could free up, but I don't know. I mean, Cameron Smith
It's like the Cowboys this year. Like, as soon as Thurston retired, it's just like, cool, now we've got $1 million in the salary cap. Now that Matt Scott's retired, I think he was on. I think he was on 550 or 600,000. So they've got a nice fat chunk of salary cap just sort of waiting to go after, some big signings next year.
The problem is Cameron Smith's like the Tom Brady of the NRL. He's just evergreen.
Well, he
doesn't look like he's, you know, he's not slowing down. And he's not getting any faster, yeah, but he's also not slowing.
He doesn't get protected as much, but yeah, he's just.
But he's also not slowing down. Like, he's
not at all.
So it's probably like Tom Brady. He could probably play. Could he essentially, you know, play 500 games? It's probably near impossible, but could he play 500 games? Seriously.
What's that? Another four years? 3 years?
I think three would get him to 500 games. I mean, this is 500 games for Melbourne, 500, I guess, first grade games.
He would.
He's probably played 500 games. State of Origin test and all that.
Yeah.
It's probably near impossible, but man, if he could, so he's had 408 appearances now.
It'd have to be another 4 years.
Yeah, three to 4 years. Okay, maybe not. That'll put him at.
Yeah, he couldn't do it in 3 years. Like, there's only 24 games plus finals, so there's only 28 games in a season, and if they make the top two all the time, then you don't play four games in the finals, you only play three. So, and whether or not they rest him throughout the season, so he would have to go on after this year for another 4 years, which, he's like 36. You said, seems impossible.
He's 36.
Seems impossible. And, you know, Beaver Menzies played until he was 40, but, you know, he had a few years over in the Super League, so not to say that doesn't count, but. Yeah, he was the last sort of indestructible man. Him, yeah, and Paul Gallen, what's he, 37? So, you know, he's hanging him up this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Although it'd be awesome. I don't see it happening. But, look, Melbourne looking pretty strong coming into the finals. Next game was the Raiders and Warriors. Raiders losing that one to the Warriors, 24-20.
Surprise of the round?
The win was the surprise of the round, yeah. Look, I thought, like, you know, the first half of the year that the Raiders were, like, you know, great guns and even sort of smokies, but their last month or so, they've really, I don't know if dropped the ball, but they've really sort of...
They've tailed off,
correct.
The win against Melbourne was good, but yeah, they've been wildly inconsistent.
And again, at home against a side, you know, that hasn't really performed up to their standards this year. Like, it was, it was a very dour affair. Nothing.
But goal kicking, once again, yeah, I've said it before in previous pods before, but goal kicking is a premium. And yeah. Jared Croker is a top goal kicker. He just had one of those games. That he couldn't get anything. I think he went one for four or one for five.
One for, you know, four. He kicks
a couple of those, and yeah. Canberra are right back in it and could possibly win that game. But it just, you know, it cost them the game in the end. And the Warriors had to. The Warriors came home with a wet sail. You know, in that last sort of 10 to 12 minutes. You know, they really, really came home strong.
Ironically enough, Isaac Luke kicked all four goals for Warriors, who he doesn't look like being there next year. So,
it looks like he's on the outer. So,
if there's a team that could chase a decent goal kicker,
that's right. He could go there, exactly. What did you think of the Hudson Young eye gouge gate?
Hudson Young eye gouge gate.
Hashtag eye gouge gate.
I don't know. There's not a lot to say to it. Like, I don't really. It seemed like a non-factor to me. That's pretty much like I sort of thought. Really? That's all. What did you think?
Oh, I didn't think it looked terrific.
No. True. It's just I don't know.
But I don't think too many people would be saying a whole lot about it if he didn't just come back from a suspension for eye gouging.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I don't think too many people would be. I think that's it's the outcry and that's the outrage for it at the moment, is that he's just come back from a suspension for the same thing. Like, I don't know whether the judiciary should throw the book at him, but it's that this is two times.
And well, was he put in a report?
Yeah, I can only assume so.
Because that's what I'm just looking at now. I don't know. I mean, assuming. I mean, it doesn't mean just because he wasn't put on a report on a game doesn't mean they can go back and look for it.
The match review committee will definitely have something to look at because everybody's going Burko about it.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's straight up. It's a repeat offense.
Yeah,
and you know that there's been three different players this year that have been pinged for eye gouging.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, I can't remember which one, whether it's Tom or George Burgess. It was one of them. Josh McGuire's had two incidents with it. And now we've had this young fella, Hudson Young, with two incidents in it. They've got to make an example of somebody to get that out of the game. You just don't need George to do. Burgess.
I think he got 8 weeks.
Yeah,
I can't remember
which Burgess. Yeah. I think he's still suspended from that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Look, they've got to throw the book at somebody to get this out of the game. You just 100%. You don't need that sort of crap. Running your fingers and your hands around somebody's melon. You don't need it.
It's hard because it obviously looks intentional and everything. Do you really think they know what they're doing when they're doing it?
Yes, it does.
Well, and that's what I can't work out. So I've never put my finger in someone's eye, but even on a football field or any sports, really, like I don't get it. If you know you're doing it, how do you not feel that? Like, it's...
I don't know.
I just, yeah,
they're football players. They're not engineers.
Well, this is true. Yeah, this is true. If we,
you know what I mean? Like, it's just, yeah.
We could go back years ago when the old John Hopewadi, let's call it
that was a finger somewhere else. But
yeah, but it's really the same sort of thing. That's
what,
another finger.
What goes through your head?
Yeah, that's right. What goes? Yeah, well.
Besides that, there's an orifice, and I should put my finger in.
I get the scratching and all that. Like, that's just part of the game. You might get someone. You might not scratch, but you know what I mean. Like, you'll tackle. Your hand might go over. But
it looks intentional when you're coming up and your hands are raking. His hands are raking upwards, and they were the same kind of incidences with Josh McGuire. His hands raking upwards, and you can see that it's intentional. And it's like I said before, I don't know how you think you can get away with it when there's 10 cameras at the game.
Maybe they think they're in WWE and it's just a rake of the eyes.
It's 80s wrestling.
It's 80s wrestling. Yeah, I think they even stamped it out. Actually, I haven't seen that for ages as well. That's probably
not a big old fake rake to the eyes. Yeah, that was while the referee's not looking. That's
I think it was Ric Flair.
I think they've stopped that out. I think the old two finger job was a Ric Flair and a Rowdy Roddy Piper. Type deal where they would do the old two finger poke to the eye. I think they sort of got rid of that. Not a great.
Yeah, because clearly if wrestling don't like it, then it shouldn't be an NRL either.
Well, that's right. Yeah, I don't remember the last time somebody did the old two finger eye poke in the NRL. But anyway.
So just finishing on that game. Raiders, they're going to struggle trying to beat the Storm next week or this week, I should say.
They've got the blueprint for it. It's just whether or not they can execute.
And I don't see it.
I don't see it either.
Storm are in too much form. They're out of form. I think they've going 4 or 5 weeks ago, I could say that they were in with a chance. Like when they beat Melbourne, but they don't look like they're.
But inconsistent over the last one.
Yeah. Next game was Bulldogs and Broncos. Bulldogs, again, is that six in a row, 30-14? The win over the Broncos?
No, I think it's five out of the last six because they lost to the Cowboys last week.
Okay. Yeah. And they just keep saying, they're just like they a team that, how do I say it? They look like they're the team that's got nothing to lose. They're all playing for each other. Like no one's starring. There's no standouts.
Playing for the emblem on the jersey. That's what they're doing.
Yep. Their go-to's their forwards, like Tolman, Napa, Josh Jackson, Hiroara Nera. I guess their whole core forward pack has been their go-to. But yeah, they're just playing for each other, like you just said.
But I think the same sort of deal. I think the Broncos were having a little bit of a bow peep at next week. Mm. They might have been not so much whether they were a little bit worried about not making the finals. I think too much had to go wrong for them to not make the finals. But this is not the type of effort,
no,
and form that they need going into the finals, especially them only finishing eighth. So I don't think that it's not the best look. They've got a lot to work on. Going into the finals against Parramatta, who are looking good heading into the finals and are going to be super tough at Bankwest next week. So the Broncos will need to change their tune a little bit. It's the first time as well the Dogs have scored more than 18 points in 2 months.
Oh wow, really?
Yeah, first time they scored more than 18 in 2 months.
Yeah. So just with the Bulldogs, like I said, five of the last six games they've won. Next year, what are they missing, I guess, just to sort of, start taking that step further? Because, I mean, at the start of the year, everyone was talking them for the spoon, but they're coming back in a wet sail.
They need consistency in the halves, and I think they need a little bit better play out of dummy half as well. Yeah. Not that Jeremy Marshall King isn't I don't think he's a true number nine. But I think that would be because they're not sold on Michael Leisha, even though they've had him at the club for, I don't know, 5 years. Five, six years now they've had Michael Leisha at the club. He's on the nose. And then he comes back into the side because they've got no other option. So I think they need a little bit there. And obviously they need a bit of consistency with the halves as well. Foran being healthy, I think, has been a good key to them playing well at the end of the season. They've got a fairly decent forward pack. Dallin Martini's Lesniak at fullback has been great. I think that's been an underrated part of their game for them, coming back into a decent bit of form, a decent strike, sort of fullback who can sort of bob up wherever he wants. Hopewadi there as well, but I think they need more consistent, a better option at number nine.
What, and have they signed, as you say, Coruscant got, that's right at the end, got poached by the Panthers. So
yeah, he got pinched by the Panthers, and I think that would have helped them big time.
So that then, if that was the case, because I think it was a two-horse race between Canterbury and the Warriors for Coruscant, I mean, Isaac Luke would be a beautiful pickup, I think, there.
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
He could...
Even if it's for a couple of years.
Yeah, he could have that virtual presence. He could help Michael Leisha if they're so sold on Michael Leisha. I think that'd be... That would possibly be a great signing.
Yeah. Depends on how much they want to sign him for, because I think they're under pretty heavy salary cap restraints, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think so. I mean, I think we've got Foran, Hopewadi, Dylan Napa. There's a few big name players on big money, I guess.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Next game, the Titans and the Dragons. The Dragons coming away with that 24-16. I'm just watching you shake your head.
Battle of the Cellar Dwellers. All right.
What did you think? Did you watch the game?
Oh, I watched bits and pieces of it. Yeah, that was it. I didn't watch bits and pieces of it. I listened to bits and pieces of it on the radio. Eleven straight loss now for the Gold Coast. In games they look good in patches. They just can't get any consistency. Yeah. And yeah, they were in this game again. You know what? They were in this game up past half time. It was only 6-6 at half time. They had the young kid Tanner Boyd that they were playing at the halfback. Yeah. He drops the ball over the line at one end. Straight away, the Dragons go down the other end. I think it was Corey Norman scores straight away. So it was a 12-point swing. You know, if that doesn't happen, then you know the game's totally different. And the Gold Coast don't. Yeah, you know, they didn't let St. George get too far ahead. I think it was 18-16 at one point.
Yeah,
but it just Widdup just sort of showed that class, that classy player that he is.
Yeah,
and just sort of took over the game a little bit. Yeah, took control of the game, and you know sort of steered him to a win. So,
just on the Dragons. No,
you're right. Just you know with Widdup leaving for Warrington next year. I think that's a bit of a hole, not so much a hole to fill, but I think they had too many good players that they tried to squeeze into those key positions this year, you know, with Widdup, Norman, Dufty, McGuinness, they're all trying to squeeze them into first grade, and it just didn't really work.
Just on the Dragons, they've Paul McGregor's asked for an end of year review to be done by Phil Gould to go over, I guess, the year in review. So, I guess going for that, you haven't heard the news with that then yet. I don't know. I mean, look, Phil Gould's a very smart man. Like he's a very smart rugby league man. I don't know if Mary's done that to just to see over the season, or is he done that to? Has he done that to sort of disguise his own failings? That's how I took that when he's come in. I mean, nothing's come out of it yet. He hasn't done the review yet.
Possibly,
but I think it sort of feels like it's disguised by his own failings, like, because again, like every year with the Dragons, they're always touted as title contenders, and they just die pretty much towards the end. They finish 15th. They have the players there. The stock there.
I think they've got a fairly good squad. Maybe a little bit of depth. I think depth is an issue. You know, their starting side is very good, but I think it's bench forwards are a little bit of a problem.
Look, the Jack DeBellum thing. Yeah, that probably played a part in this as well. But
you can't blame that all season, though.
No, that's why I think. I mean, we'll see what happens with this review. But I think it's. I think Mary's trying to disguise his own failings, that he couldn't get his side to the top eight, like to finish 15th with the side he has. So. I guess we'll just have to wait and see on that one.
Gotta wait for that one.
The next game, packed house at Leichhardt. Sharks coming away with the win, 25-8, which moved them into the finals and knocking the West Tigers out to ninth, which I think they finished ninth 6 times in the last 7 or 8 years. They're pretty consistent.
I'm pretty sure they finished ninth last year.
Yeah, I think they've done it like the last 5 times at least that I can remember. They're pretty consistent at finishing, but
they love ninth.
love, like, it's just, I watched that whole game. It was, I think, because Leichhardt, it was Robbie Farah's last game, so there's a lot of factors, but just seeing that hill at Leichhardt completely, there's no, like, it was
It's awesome.
There's
yeah.
no way you
it's
could
excellent. Yeah.
Fit a player, another player, another fan on there.
Not unless they're hanging off the scoreboard.
No, it was a sort of a wild sort of pre-start. Like, it was, Robbie Farah was told that he wasn't going to be in, so he resigned to that, and then he was in, and then he wasn't in, and then Corey Thompson's come out of nowhere, and I think he had a calf strain, and then he's playing it, and as soon as he ran out. Yeah, the crowd just went ballistic as soon as he ran out. This is even before he got on the field. So, the game itself.
At least he got his farewell game that he wanted.
Yeah, yeah, and well, that was it. It kind of actually helped. I mean, look, I think they missed Corey Thompson. That Paul Mirovski, Mirovski.
Yeah, Momorowski.
Definitely not a fullback. Yeah. That's what I think. I think that's how the Sharks sort of pulled away from that game. I think Corey was a huge miss from that side. Not only in his offense, just his I guess it's probably his organizational skills in defense, because there's nothing of him.
But his position,
his position,
positional play.
Yeah. So that was. I mean, and they had no go forward. That was the thing I noticed.
That's right. They were very, very lackluster up front. But most of these games were fairly tight, this week, fairly tight at halftime. But, three tries in the first 10 minutes of the second half to the Sharks, and that just deflated them straight from there. And that's just too hard to come back from.
Yeah. There was not much else to take away from that game, I guess, except for
the cheeky 4-gallon field goal.
Well, actually, taking that out of the way, wouldn't you be dirty? Like, so that's so they were up 16. So I'm thinking dirty as probably a gambler.
Bad beats. That's a bad beat right there. anybody who watches SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt, that's a bad beat. If either the line was 16 or 17, or if you had a bet on it, you're going to win by 16. So you'd be pretty dirty at that.
So he's probably it was a great field goal. Come off the brute.
it looked like he'd been slotting field goals for 10 years.
Very cheeky right at the end there, with a minute to go. But yeah, as soon as I kicked it, I went straight to my gambling head and thought I'd be filthy if I had 16 on that.
you'd be stoked. You'd be like, all right, I picked the Sharks to win by 16.
There's a lot of line all of a sudden 16.
Of a sudden, there's a news report out there that Paul Gallen has been assassinated after the game from a mad William Hill gambler. Somebody from Ladbrokes came along and stabbed him on the way to the team bus.
That's what you get for getting a field goal. Before we move on the last game, just Sharks, they played well. I think they'll be up for it next week against Manly.
That should be a fairly even game, I think, next week.
Very even game. And that's also just come through that game will be hosted at Lotto Land. It's been green lit.
Yeah, right.
Asbestos issues.
Nobody has to go there with a gas mask or anything like that.
Well, no, as long as that cage is over the players, and then, asbestos doesn't come out of anywhere, I think they'll be fine. Round out the season, Panthers, there's no other way of saying it, but absolutely demoralizing the Knights. Well, I wouldn't even say the Panthers. Let's just call it the Nathan Cleary show.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Nathan Cleary beat the Knights 34 points to 10.
Yeah, that,
if he was the only one, if he was the only one on the field, he still would have beaten Newcastle.
Oh man, if you even if you were playing fantasy football, he so it looks like the his fantasy points was 120 and the closest was 54.
Oh my god.
What look, I mean, yeah. Look, great finish of the season for the Panthers. Nathan Cleary clearly could have been doing this the whole year. You know, four tries, 9 goals, I should say.
9 goals, yeah. 34 points, yeah. Club record.
What, instead of saying what went right for the Panthers, what went wrong for the Knights?
Everything.
Everything, yeah. It's really... Oh,
it's,
yeah,
it's, yeah. But it's, okay. They've Newcastle have just been the most frustrating team the last, I don't know, 16 weeks. They just, you know, couldn't hang. It's just the same old thing. Couldn't hang on to the ball. It just a train wreck of the last month. You know, even though they had two wins, you know, against the Gold Coast and the Cowboys, but you just, they had no effort. They weren't interested in that game at all.
Weren't interested
in being there at all.
I don't know how much I buy into the whole Nathan Brown losing the players and all that, because generally if he loses the locker room, as they say, or loses the sheds, and the coach leaves, generally the players play well when that coach leaves.
Have a look at what happened on the Gold Coast. All the talk about Garth Brennan had lost the playing group and all that sort of stuff, and that so they ditch him, and what do? They still lose their last 7 or 8 games, and show nothing.
Yeah, I suppose, but I mean, this is two different sides completely. But generally, I've seen where if a coach leaves because he's lost the shed. They'll at least attempt or come back and win, get a win. They just I don't know. I think there was more into that than that, but I mean that game was, yeah. Well, it's really just a Nathan Cleary show. There's really no other way to say it.
Yeah, no, that's all it turned into. I didn't see. I think they had a young kid. I think the Newcastle Knights had a young kid. I think his name's Stafford Toa. I think he debuted on the wing for him, and I think he played really well. And Clemmer was below average, but Clemmer was David Clemmer.
Yeah.
So, but everything else in regards to sort of Newcastle's go forward handling errors just. Yeah, they're just it's like they've got no leadership. You know, I don't know what sort of captain Mitchell Pearce is. There's all talk around, you know, is Mitchell Pearce the right captain for the team? It's just a comedy of errors in their front offices and everything at the moment. So like something serious has to go on in the off season for Newcastle to get any better,
because I mean, look, they're sort of like, I guess, St. George. They have the team there, they have the pieces.
No, they've got the team.
I just think there's more factors there at play, but who knows? I mean,
there's more to it. There's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that's going on. They're losing Sean Kenny Dowell as well. For next year as well. He's gone. And I've tried to find out. He's going to the Super League, but nobody knows which club.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, he's going to the Super League, but every article that you try and read over the last couple of days, they're just like, oh, yeah, he's going to the Super League. Oh, but we don't know which club yet. So you just like, oh, right, great reporting. Oh,
just keep saying head to the Super League, UK deal. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that doesn't really...
That's all it says. No, that doesn't help.
No, that doesn't help.
If you're trying to do a rugby league podcast and you're trying to give people the right information, it's just going to the Super League. There you go, everybody. He's heading to England next year.
Maybe because of certain, I mean, that in that situation, maybe there's some players that have to be moved on before he can be named for that team, if that makes sense. So, you know, possibly. Maybe there's, yeah, like there's someone that's that, you know, they've got to wait for them to be cut or something before they can name him. Who knows? So, but yeah, it all says Super League, and
that's all it says. Just going to the UK. Yeah. Righto. Why even put the report out there?
Yeah, you're gonna have to put another report. Yeah, correct. You'll put another report out there to basically say, "Yep, he's going to the Super League with this team." So
that's right. Well, that's why you do the reporting. You find out which team he's going to. You don't just put out a phony baloney report and go, "Hey, guess what? He's going to the Super League."
Yeah, that's true. So that wraps up round 25, the last round of the NRL. Just quickly, the games next week. So the Friday night game, we'll see the Roosters up against the Rabbitohs. The two Saturday games will be the Storm and Raiders and the Seagulls and Sharks. And the final game for finals week one will be the Eels versus Broncos. Any thoughts on that sort of... I think I'm looking forward out of all of them, probably to the way the Eels are playing, so probably towards that game being an elimination final.
That's probably got the potential to be the most lopsided game, I think. If Brisbane turn up, Brisbane turn up with their effort levels like they did last week, I don't think they will, but you never know. I don't know. I think the Friday night game will be good, you know, considering we just seen it the week before, and to see what sort of adjustments that the Roosters make and what adjustments the Rabbitohs make to, you know, to sort of keep their momentum going. So I think that Friday night game is probably the most intriguing for me. Manly and the Sharks, you know, that'll be an interesting game. They're all going to be good games.
Yeah, of course. It's finals time.
Like we said before, you know, the Raiders have got the blueprint for beating Melbourne in Melbourne. So it'll just be whether or not, you know, they can sort of execute again and see what sort of different game plan they have to try and get the win down there. Which Melbourne, you know, Melbourne have been pretty good all year, but you know, they're virtually unbeatable down in Melbourne. So
let's just get
these should all be good games. Like the only one that I could see maybe that could be a little bit lopsided is Parramatta and the Broncos, but I think the rest should be super competitive.
So the our usual stud and dud of the week, I think we're going to do a little bit different again this week. I think mine were two duds this week. Do you want to go, Miles? Last week, I should say. Last week, it was two duds. Not this week.
Yeah, so we've got a stud and dud this week. Well, you know, I think just going, as I usually do, I start off with a dud. And it's going to be 11 duds, actually, and that would be 1 through 11 of the English cricket team. sorry, boys, but the Ashes are coming back home. It's the first time in 18 years that the Aussies have gone over there with the Ashes and defended, you know, or so not defended, but, you know, retained the Ashes in England. So the weather has played its part in two tests now to try and help the Poms out, but to no avail. So their king and saviour, Jofra Archer, hasn't offered up much except for knocking Steve Smith in the head. He's not really a test bowler. He's a one-day bowler and a 2020 bowler. He will get better with the more tests that he plays, I think.
Yeah.
But for him to go in there and have some sort of instant impact was silly. I don't think he's a test bowler.
So just, I guess, me coming off that, my start of the week was, I guess, pretty obvious in Steve Smith.
Another 200.
Yeah, another 200. So he's tallied 671 runs at a strike rate of 134.2. Yeah, just phenomenal. He's a real shot, which is, look, he's probably not going to happen, but he's a real shot of reaching Don Bradman's peerless mark of 974 runs during the 1930 Ashes. Like, he's a long way off, but the way he's been playing.
No, you don't know the form that he's in.
He's only going to get 300 runs, which sounds crazy to get it in one test.
The Ashes is gone.
He's just, obviously got over all the stuff that we don't really need to talk about. I think personally plays better not being a captain. He's definitely a leader, don't get me wrong, but
yeah,
maybe he plays better than not being a captain. Maybe, you know, he's a leader, yes, correct. And look, Tim Payne's been fine. He's been admirable. He's done nothing wrong.
He actually made some runs this test.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. This is true. Well, someone else has got to make some runs as well. I just think
that's right. Yeah.
It could be. But it could be like a monkey off the back thing. Maybe Steve Smith doesn't want to be captain anymore. I mean, I could be completely wrong here.
I think he really liked that. I think he liked that captain. Sort of thing's a bit of a. Reality check, whether or not he will ever be captain again. And like you said, that could be the monkey off the back. And now he's a leader, and he's always going to be there for plenty of advice, even though technically he's not, you know, the captain or the vice captain or anything like that. So he can only help. And you know, doesn't he average like 66 in tests?
Tim Payne.
No, Steve Smith.
Yeah.
Pretty sure he averages like 66 in tests. No, as in overall. I think I was looking up his stats the other night. He's played like 60. He's played like 67 tests, and he averages like 65. And I think that was before his 200.
Correct.
And he's just gone back to the number one test batsman and overtaken Virat Kohli. Who I think only averages like, or, you know, on only, but I think he averages like 58 or 59 in Test cricket.
And mind you, and everybody else has had a 200 day head start on him too. So on Steve Smith.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I mean, again, we're not talking about why, but everyone's had a head start on him. So
he's a machine.
He shrugged off any naysayers. Surely, even as you can sort of hear it, sort of like obviously first test, you know what was going to happen, but the more runs he got, the he just kept breaking that down that crowd. It was so good to watch. The crowd was just getting lower and lower, more appreciating
too. Everybody's heaping all their disgust to Dave Warner now.
Yeah, well that's probably warranted, and that's not against
his form. His form's been ordinary.
That's right. It's against his form. That's exactly right. His form's been extremely ordinary. So, he had a great World Cup, or you know, he had a fair.
No, that's
World
right.
Cup,
yeah, his one day form's been really good. But yeah, just this Test series hasn't been great, and it doesn't help either that, you know, he's obviously the most experienced Test opener that's there. But it also doesn't help that, you know, Marcus Harris hasn't made any runs. When they had Cameron Bancroft in there, he hasn't made any runs. So when Warner gets out, that's one wicket. And then if nobody else is making runs at the top of the order, then it's two wickets down.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah. And it's been Steve Smith to come in and just, I guess, save the side, so to speak. But
well, and since they put him back in, Manus Labuschagne. He's been great.
Yeah.
He's been excellent.
So well done, obviously, to Australia retaining the Ashes with one test to go. Looking at our week ahead, I've got a dud and possible another stud of the week, but that might be for a podcast coming to. Possibly this week, so maybe stay tuned for that one.
Coming to you soon.
if hint hint, the person wears number 84.
84.
So if you know any player that wears number 84, that may be a hint.
So I'll go for my start of the week, and we'll stick with cricket. So my start of the week is Lasith Malinga. Sri Lanka and New Zealand have been having a test and 2020 series over there in Sri Lanka. He got himself another double hat trick. So that's 4 wickets in 4 balls. So it's the second time that he's actually done that. He's done that in a World Cup game, like a 50-over World Cup game versus South Africa in 2007. And now he's done it again in a 2020 international for Sri Lanka. It was in Pelikeli in Kandy in the third T20 against New Zealand. He had a game figures of 5 for 6. So that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. You know, in an era of, you know, bash and crash, hit and giggle, 2020 cricket, yeah. Lasith Malinga had game figures of 5 for 6. So it's his, and the thing is too, that's his 5th international hat trick. So he's got three hat tricks in one day internationals, and now he's got 2 hat tricks in T20 internationals. So it's the third time that a double hat trick has that's happened. He's got 2 of them, and the other one that's happened is the Afghani bowler Rashid Khan, who actually got it at the start of this year in February against Ireland. So like I said, you know, in the era now of hit and giggle cricket, you know, it's good to see the sort of bowlers getting a little bit back.
And look like after that 4-wicket haul in 4 balls, he's jumped 20 places to number 21 on the latest ICC T20 rankings. So that's a serious jump.
<That'll> do it.
Yeah, that'll do it. Oh, wow.
Only takes 4 wickets in 4 balls.
In 4 balls, yeah. That's, you know, if everyone could do that. That has been, yeah.
But unbelievable. He retired from Test cricket like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just saying that his knees can't take the beating, but yeah, he can still pump out the ODIs and T20. So he's bowling, you know, bowling is as good as he ever has.
Yeah, I think I think his body's suited for T20. I mean, he could. Yeah. I mean, look, if he's still making money off the 50 game overall, good. But his age and his body could be well suited for a T20 game.
Well, that's the thing too. There's that many T20 leagues and that getting around the world at the moment. So he's still got those opportunities to sort of play essentially year round as well.
Yeah. Well, that'll do it for the NRL Round 25 podcast. We'll still review the NRL of the finals during the final season. Don't forget to look out for any other podcasts that may pop up, not NRL related. So an NFL one we'll look at doing, and I guess an NBA one soon when that sort of starts up.
Not far away from the NBA either.
So my name's Jason. Have a good week, everyone. No, that's true.
No, that's it. I can smell the NBA season coming on soon too.
Yeah, well,
I'm Miles.
Yeah. That'll be a long conversation, possibly longer than an NRL conversation.
Oh, let's not do another two-hour one. Sorry to all those people that listened to the last NFL one. That was brutal, but it's possibly a lot of stuff to get to.
It's possibly, I mean, just with the off-season alone, that could be an hour and a half podcast. I was just talking about the off-season of the NBA. That'll be a good one. That'll be a really good one. So don't forget to check us out on Facebook, on the Final Play Podcast, and on Twitter at Final Play Pod. Shout out again to Eureka. for putting, I guess, putting our last podcast up on the website. Yeah, I'm very, very happy about that.
Yeah, Eureka Sports cards. They're the go-to if you want any of your trading card needs, and also gimco.com.au, GIMKO, gimco.com.au. So you can also access our podcasts, our non-NRL podcasts on there. So yeah, just a shout out to Dom for getting that done to us. He's been great. So
especially if you want NFL cards, like you were saying. The NFL cards seem to just go ballistic on there really quick.
it's both. Like when they have NBA Fridays, they sell out in 2 minutes. So it's super popular, and they're two cool customers, Dom and Mojo King. So they're you love it, Mojo King.
Yeah, I always love. I want to sign off with Mojo King now, pretty much every second week, I think. just because it's such.
You
a
can't
good
call
name.
Yourself.
I can't
you
call
can't
myself
call
Mojo
King.
King, but I'm saying
only
I'm
one gonna, Mojo. King.
I'm going to sign off by saying shout out to Mojo King. That's how I'm going to sign off. No, I definitely can't be a Mojo King. No. My wife could probably
only,
attest
there
to
is
that.
Only one. There's only one.
Have a good week, everyone.
Have a good week, everyone. You will hear from us very soon.
Peace.
See ya.